Chapter 51. The glamour experiments on the space station Columbus centered on the manufacture of exotic medicines, the growth of pure crystals for computer semiconductor chips, and gamma ray observation. But the bread and butter activity of the 40-ton settlement on the fringe of the last frontier was the repair and service of satellites. Jack Sherman, commander of the station, was in the cylinder-shaped maintenance module helping a team of engineers jockey a satellite into a repair cradle when a voice came through the central speaker. "You available, Jack?"
"I'm here."
"Can you come to the command module?"
"What's up?"
"We've got some joker breaking into our communications channel."
"Pipe it down here."
"The better you should come up."
"Give me a couple of minutes."
The satellite secured and the airlock closed, Sherman peeled off his pressure suit and slipped his boots into a pair of slotted rails. Then he walked in a sliding motion through the weightless environment to the brain center of the station. His chief communications and electronics engineer simply nodded at his approach.
"Listen to this."
He spoke into a microphone mounted in a control panel.
"Please identify yourself again."
There was a slight pause, and then,
"Columbus, this is Jersey Colony. We request permission to dock at your station."
The engineer turned and looked up at Sherman.
"What do you think? Must be some weirdo on Earth."
Sherman leaned over the panel.
"Jersey Colony, or whatever you call yourself, this is a closed NASA channel. You are interfering with space communications procedures. Please break off."
"No way," came the strange voice. "Our lunar transfer vehicle will rendezvous with you in 2 hours. Please advise us on docking procedures."
"Lunar what?"
Sherman's face tightened in anger.
"Houston Control, do you copy?"
"We copy," came a voice from the Houston Space Control Center.
"What do you make of it?"
"We're trying to get a fix on it, Columbus. Please stand by."
"I don't know who you are, fella," snapped Sherman, "but you're in deep trouble."
"The name is Eli Steinmetz. Please have medical assistance standing by. I have 2 injured men on board."
Sherman pounded a fist on the back of the engineer's chair.
"This is crazy."
"Who am I communicating with?" asked Steinmetz.
"This is Jack Sherman, commander of the Columbus."
"Sorry about the abrupt intrusion, Sherman, but I thought you'd been informed of our arrival."
Before Sherman could reply, Houston Control returned.
"Columbus, his signals are not coming from Earth. Repeat, not coming from Earth. They originate in space beyond you."
"All right, you guys, what's the gag?"
The voice of NASA's Director of Flight Operations broke in.
"No gag. Jack, this is Irwin Mitchell. Prepare your crew to receive Steinmetz and his colonists."
"What colonists?"
"About time someone from the inner core showed up," said Steinmetz. "For a minute there, I thought we'd have to crash the front gate."
"Sorry, Eli. The president thought it best to keep things quiet until you reached Columbus."
"Will someone please tell me what's going on?" Sherman demanded in exasperation.
"Eli will explain when you meet him," answered Mitchell.
Then he addressed Steinmetz.
"How are the wounded?"
"Resting comfortably, but one will require major surgery. A bullet is lodged near the base of the brain."
"You heard, Jack," said Mitchell. "Alert the crew of the shuttle. They may have to advance their departure."
"I'll take care of it," Sherman said.
His voice settled and the tone was calm, but he was far too intelligent not to be bewildered.
"Just where in hell does this Jersey Colony come from?"
"Would you believe the moon?" Mitchell replied.
"No," said Sherman flatly. "I damn well wouldn't."
The Theodore Roosevelt Room in the West Wing of the White House was once called the Fish Room because it contained aquariums and fishing trophies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Under Richard Nixon, it was furnished in Queen Anne and Chippendale style and used for staff meetings and occasional press conferences. The walls and carpet were in light and dark shades of terracotta. A painting of the Declaration of Independence hung on the east wall over a carved wooden mantel. Sternly surveying the room from the south wall, Teddy Roosevelt sat astride a horse in a portrait painted in Paris by Tadej Štika.
The president preferred this intimate room over the more formal cabinet room for important discussions, partly because there were no windows. He sat at the head of the conference table and scribbled on a notepad. On his left sat Secretary of Defense Jess Simmons. Next to him came CIA Director Martin Brogan, Dan Fawcett, and Leonard Hudson. Douglas Oates, the Secretary of State, sat immediately to his right, followed by National Security Advisor Alan Mercier and Air Force General Alan Post, who headed up the military space program. Hudson had spent over an hour briefing the president's men on the history of the Jersey colony. At first, they sat there stunned and silent. Then the excitement set in, and they fired a barrage of questions that Hudson fielded until the president ordered lunch served in the room. The utter astonishment gave way to enthusiastic compliments for Hudson and his inner corps, which slowly faded to grim reality at the report on the conflict with the Soviet cosmonauts. "Once the Jersey colonists return safely to Cape Canaveral," said the president, "perhaps I can appease Antonov by offering to share some of the immense data accumulated by Steinmetz and his team." "Why should we give away anything?" demanded Simmons. "They've stolen enough of our technology as it is." "No denying their thievery," replied the president. "But if our positions were reversed, I wouldn't allow them to get away with killing 14 of our astronauts." "I'm on your side, Mr. President," said Secretary of State Oates. "But if the shoe was indeed on your foot, what course of retribution could you take?" "Simple," said General Post. "If I were Antonov, I'd order the Columbus blasted out of the sky." "An abhorrent thought, but one we have to take seriously," said Brogan. "The Soviet leaders must feel they have a divine right to destroy the station and everyone on board." "Or the shuttle and its crew," Post added. The president stared at the general. "Can Columbus and Gettysburg be shielded?" Post gave a slight shake of his head. "Our X-ray laser defense system won't be operational for another 14 months. While in space, both the station and the shuttle are vulnerable to the Soviet Union's Cosmos 1400 killer satellites. We can provide solid protection for the Gettysburg only after she passes through Earth's atmosphere." The president turned to Brogan. "How do you see it, Martin?" "I don't think they'll target Columbus. They'd be leaving themselves wide open for us to retaliate against their new Salyut 10 station. I say they'll try for the shuttle." An icy silence settled over the Roosevelt room as every man present struggled with his own thoughts. Then Hudson's face took on an enlightened expression, and he rapped his pen against the table surface. "We've overlooked something," he said in a level tone. "Like what?" asked Fawcett. "The true purpose behind their attack on Jersey Colony." Brogan took the lead. "To save face by destroying all trace of our breakthrough in space." "Not destroy, but steal," Hudson said fervently. "Murdering the colonists wasn't an eye-for-an-eye punishment. Jess Simmons hit on it. To the Kremlin's way of thinking, it was vital to seize the base intact in order to help themselves to the technology, the data, and the results of billions of dollars and 25 years of work. That was their goal. Revenge was secondary." "He makes a valid point," said Oates. "Except that with the colonists on their way to Earth, Jersey Colony is up for grabs. By using our lunar transfer vehicle, we can have another crew on site within 2 weeks," said Hudson. "The two cosmonauts who were sitting in Salinas 8, Simmons said. "What's to stop them from simply walking in and taking over the abandoned colony?" "I'm sorry," Hudson answered. "I forgot to mention that Steinmetz transported the 5 dead Russians back to the lunar lander and loaded them on board. Then he forced the surviving crew to lift off and return to Earth by threatening to scatter them over the moon's surface with the last rocket in his launcher." "The sheriff cleaning up the town," Brogan said admiringly. "I can't wait to meet this guy." "Not without cost," said Hudson quietly. "Steinmetz is bringing back 2 seriously wounded men and 1 body." "What is the name of the dead man?" asked the president. "Dr. Kurt Perry, a brilliant biochemist." The president nodded at Fawcett. "Let's see that he receives a proper ceremony." There was a slight pause, and then Post brought the discussion back on track. "Okay, if the Soviets didn't get Jersey Colony, what are they left with?" "The Gettysburg," Hudson answered. The Russians still have a chance at pirating a treasure trove of scientific data.
By snatching the shuttle out of the air, Simmons stated sarcastically. News to me they have Buck Rogers on their side.
They don't need him, Hudson retorted. It's technically possible to program a deviation into the flight guidance systems. The computers can be fooled into sending the wrong signal to the drive elevons, the thrusters, and other equipment to control the Gettysburg. There are 1,000 different ways to nudge the shuttle off its course a few degrees. Depending on the distance from touchdown, it could be thrown off as far as 1,000 miles from the Kennedy spaceport at Cape Canaveral.
But the pilots can override the automated system and land on manual control, protested Post.
Not if they're conned into thinking Houston Control is monitoring their return flight path.
Is this possible? Asked the president incredulously.
Alan Mercier nodded. Providing the Soviets have local transmitters with the capacity to overpower the shuttle's internal electronics and jam all signals from Houston Control. The president exchanged grim looks with Brogan.
Cayo Santa Maria, Brogan muttered miserably.
An island north of Cuba containing a powerful transmission and listening facility with the necessary muscle to do the job, the president explained to the others.
Maybe they haven't caught on that our colonists have left the moon, Fawcett said hopefully.
They know, replied Hudson. Once their eavesdropping satellites were aimed toward Jersey Colony, they've monitored every one of our transmissions.
We'll have to come up with a plan to neutralize the island's equipment, suggested Post.
Brogan smiled.
Just so happens there is an operation in the works.
Post smiled back.
If you're scheming what I'm thinking, all I'd like to know is when.
There is talk, purely a rumor, mind you, that Cuban military forces are going to launch an attack and destroy mission sometime after midnight tonight.
And the departure time of the shuttle for home? Asked Alan Mercier.
0500 tomorrow, Post answered.
That settles it, said the president.
Inform the commander of Columbus to hold Gettysburg on the docking platform until we can guarantee its safe return.
Everyone around the table seemed satisfied for the moment, except Hudson. He had the look of a boy who had just lost his puppy to the county dog catcher.
I just wish, he muttered to no one in particular, it was all that easy.